That crunching sound. You know the one. You're walking across your kitchen, or your bathroom, somewhere you've walked 1,000 times before, and suddenly the floor doesn't just give a little, it groans. It's a hollow, wet sort of protest that travels right up through the sole of your foot. You try to tell yourself it's just a house settling, or a loose nail, but deep down, in that place where your homeowner's intuition lives, you know better. That's the sound of a subfloor that has given up the ghost. It's the sound of structural plywood, or OSB that has spent too many months, or maybe even years, drinking in a slow silent leak from a dishwasher or a toilet flange. By the time you can actually feel that dip under your heel, the damage isn't just starting, it's finished. If you ignore it, you're looking at a hole that eventually swallows an appliance, or a person. You're looking at mold that starts in the dark and ends in your lungs. And worst of all, you're looking at a repair bill that doubles every week you pretend you didn't hear that crunch. We're going to talk about how to stop that rot, how to cut out the cancer in your floor, and how to put back something that's actually stronger than what the builder put in 30 years ago. Before we even touch a pry bar, I want you to reach into your pocket or look over at your workbench and find a simple everyday item, a single playing card, or maybe a business card, as long as it's got some stiffness to it. Just one. Toss it near your tool bag. It doesn't look like much, and it certainly doesn't look like a construction tool, but by the time we're ready to lay the new wood down, that little piece of cardstock is going to be the difference between a floor that stays silent and one that squeaks every time the wind blows. It's a trick I learned from a guy who spent 40 years doing nothing but high-end hardwoods, and it saved my sanity more than once. Now let's get into the mess. The biggest mistake most people make when they realize they have subfloor damage is they try to fix it from the top down without understanding what's happening underneath. They peel back the linoleum or the tile, see a dark spot, and start slapping some floor leveler or a thin patch over it. That is like putting a fresh coat of paint on a rusted out car door. The rot is a living thing, or at least the result of a living problem. Water. You have to find the source. If it's the wax ring on the toilet, replace it. If it's the supply line under the sink, tighten it. But once the water is off, you have to accept that the wood is compromised. Subfloor isn't just a surface, it's a structural bridge between your floor joists. When it gets wet, the glue that holds those layers of wood together dissolves. The wood delaminates. It turns into something with the structural integrity of a wet cracker. I remember the first time I tried to save a subfloor. I was young, maybe 22, working on a rental property. There was a soft spot in front of the tub. I figured I'd just cut out a little 12-inch square, right where it felt soft, and sister in a couple of scraps. I didn't want to pull up the whole floor. I spent 4 hours fighting with a circular saw in a cramped bathroom, only to realize that the rot had traveled along the top of the joist, 3 feet in either direction. Because I tried to be surgical and small, I ended up with a patch that had no support. The first time the tenant stepped on it, the whole thing shifted. It creaked like a haunted house. I had to go back in, tear out twice as much material, and do it right. That taught me the golden rule of subfloors. You don't cut to the damage, you cut to the joists. When you start your layout, you need to find the center of the joist on either side of the rot. You aren't just looking for where the wood is dark. You're looking for where the wood is solid. Take a finish nail and poke it through the floor. If it goes in like it's hitting butter, keep moving. When you find resistance, that's your starting point. You want your new piece of plywood to span at least 2 joists, preferably 3. This distributes the weight. If you just patch a hole between joists, you're creating a diving board. Eventually, that diving board is going to snap. Safety here isn't just about goggles, though you absolutely need them, because old subfloor is full of hidden staples and sand that love to fly into your eyes. The real safety risk is what you can't see under the wood. Before you plunge that saw blade into the floor, you have to know what's living in the joist bays. Is there a PVC drain line for the shower? Is there a Romex electrical wire stapled to the side of the timber? Is there a gas line? If you set your circular saw to its maximum depth and go to town, you might find out the hard way that a plumbing repair is way more expensive than a floor repair. Set your saw blade depth so it's only 1/8 of an inch deeper than the thickness of the subfloor. Usually, that's about 7/8 of an inch total. You want to kiss the top of the joist, not chew into it. As you start that first cut, pay attention to the sound of the saw. If the wood is truly rotten, the saw will high side and scream through it with almost no resistance. But as you hit the healthy wood, you'll hear the motor bog down just a hair. You'll feel that familiar vibration in the handle, the bite of the teeth into solid Douglas fir or pine. That's your sensory reset. If the saw stays in that easy mode for the whole cut, you haven't gone far enough. You need to keep cutting until you're back in the land of solid resistance. Once you've got your rectangular hole cut out, and you've pried the old soggy mess out, which is going to smell like a damp basement and old mistakes, look at the joists. If they're wet, you stop. You don't put new wood on wet joists. You put a fan on them. You wait. If they're soft or punky, you have to sister them. That means taking a new piece of dimensional lumber, like a 2x6 or 2x8, and bolting it alongside the old one to give your new subfloor something solid to bite into. This is where the work gets heavy and dirty. You're on your knees, reaching into a dark hole, probably covered in old insulation dust. This is the part where most people quit and try to shortcut it. Don't. Now let's look at those joist tops. They're likely covered in old glue and half-pulled nails. Take a heavy-duty scraper or a cold chisel and get those tops smooth. You want a flat landing strip for your new plywood. If there's a hump of old construction adhesive, your new floor will have a high spot, and you'll feel it every time you walk over it. It'll be a tiny mountain in your kitchen. Here's where our mystery object comes back into play, that playing card. When you measure and cut your new piece of plywood, you want it to fit well, but you do not want it to be tight. If you wedge a piece of plywood in so tight that you have to hammer it into place, you have just built a noise machine. Wood expands and contracts with the seasons. If there's no room for that new patch to breathe, the edges will rub against the old floor. Every time the humidity changes, or every time you step on it, that friction creates a high-pitched scritch or a deep groan. Take that playing card and use it as a spacer. Slide it into the gap between your new patch and the existing floor on all four sides. That tiny 32nd of an inch gap is your expansion joint. It's the secret to a professional silent floor. Before you screw anything down, we need to talk about the feel of the fix. You've got your joists cleaned, your sisters installed if needed, and your patch cut to size with a tiny gap for breathing. Now reach for the construction adhesive. Don't be shy with it. Run a thick serpentine bead along the top of every joist. This isn't just for strength. The glue acts as a gasket. It fills the microscopic voids between the joist and the plywood, so there is zero movement. Movement is the enemy. Movement is what causes the nails to rub and the wood to squeak. When you lay the patch down into the glue, don't start screaming screws into it yet. Step on it. Stand right in the middle of your new patch and shift your weight. What do you hear? You should hear nothing. What do you feel? It should feel like you're standing on a concrete slab. If there's any deflection, any bounce, it means your joist spacing is too wide or your patch is too thin. You want it to feel dead, inert. If it feels like a trampoline, you need to go back underneath and add more blocking. When it comes to fasteners, throw away the nails. I don't care what the original builder used. Nails eventually loosen and pop. Use high-quality floor screws, the kind with the ribbed heads that countersink themselves. Space them every 6 inches along the edges and every 8 to 10 inches through the middle. As you drive them, listen to the impact driver. You'll hear that tack, 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 slow down and deepen in pitch as the screw head pulls the plywood tight into the glue. That sound change tells you the fastener has grabbed the joist and is pulling the two pieces of wood into a permanent marriage. If the screw just spins, you miss the joist. Back it out, angle it, and try again. A spinning screw is a future squeak waiting to happen. I remember a job back in 14, a big old Victorian house. The owner had a handyman fix a subfloor in the hallway. The guy used drywall screws. Drywall screws are brittle. They have zero shear strength. About 6 months later, the owner called me because the floor felt loose. I pulled the carpet back, and almost every single screw head had snapped off just from the vibration of people walking. The plywood was just floating there, held down by gravity and hope. I had to redrill every single hole. It was a miserable, tedious day that could have been avoided with $5 worth of the right fasteners. Use the floor screws. They're gold-colored or green for a reason. Now that the patch is in and the screws are sunk just below the surface, run your hand across the seam. You're looking for a flush transition. If the new wood is slightly lower than the old wood, because the old floor is swollen, don't panic. This is where you use a high-quality, Portland-based floor patch compound. Spread it across the seam with a wide trowel, feathering it out at least 6 or 8 inches on either side. You're creating a ramp that the eye and the foot can't detect. When that compound dries, sand it flat. If you can close your eyes, run your hand across the repair, and not be able to tell where the old wood ends and the new wood begins, you've won. The final test is the walk. Don't just step on it once. Walk across it, then stop and bounce on your heels. Listen to the rest of the room. Does the china cabinet rattle? Does the floor moan? If you did your job right, that section of the house should be the quietest, most solid part of the building. You've taken a structural failure and turned it into a reinforced anchor point. As you're cleaning up the sawdust and putting your tools away, take a look at that scrap of plywood you cut out, the rotten piece. Break it apart with your hands. Look at how the layers just peel away like wet cardboard. It's a good reminder of why we don't ignore the crunch. Wood is a fantastic building material, but it's essentially a bundle of straws designed to move water. Once it starts moving water again, after it's been turned into a house, it forgets its job as a floor and tries to go back to being a forest. Our job is to keep it dry and keep it tight. You've probably got other spots in your place that give you a little bit of worry. Maybe a creak in the stairs, or a soft spot near the back door where the dog's water bowl always spills. Don't wait for those to become craters. The logic we use today, cutting to the joists, cleaning the landing, using spacers for expansion, and gluing for silence, applies to almost any wood frame repair you'll ever encounter. It's about respecting the physics of the house. So tell me, what's the floor situation looking like at your place? Have you got a spot that's been fighting you? Maybe something hidden under an old rug, because you aren't quite sure how deep the rabbit hole goes. Or maybe you've got a project where the previous owner's fix is starting to fall apart, and you're the one who has to clean up the mess. Whatever is creaking or sagging under your feet, it's not going to get better on its own. Let's figure out how to bridge that gap and get you back on solid ground.